Welcome back to 40A&M in 5, a download of 40A&M LLC, recorded at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Sunday, November 24th. I'm Chris Bohm, and this is our weekly selection of tech sector and related global news and policy highlights from the past week. Coming up, with work progressing on the healthcare.gov website and similar lessons learned in the UK, is it time in the U.S. for federal IT acquisition reform? Surveillance revelations and U.S. tech, from public relations predicament to business impacts and the longer term. Ofcom aims to refine its mobile communications regulatory strategy in the UK. European Commissioner Viviane Reding meets with U.S. justice officials on EU-U.S. privacy, while in the same week, the TTIP negotiations take a step forward. The European Commission, body of European regulators, and European Council all support a connected continent. And now for the details. And finally, some notes from last week's long-awaited Federal Trade Commission forum on the Internet of Things. But first, a report from the IT research firm The Standish Group has found that 94% of all federal IT projects come in late, over budget, or not at all, getting scrapped completely. In a report by National Public Radio's Morning Edition this past week, it was cited that President Obama had recognized a more general problem than just the failed launch of the healthcare.gov website, saying the biggest gap between the private sector and the federal government is when it comes to IT, how we procure it, how we purchase it. I actually think that once we get this particular website fixed, there are going to be some lessons learned that we can apply to the federal government generally, the president told NBC News. Commenting on the situation for the U.S.'s National Public Radio, Mike Bracken, an official with the U.K.'s Government Digital Service, agrees. He saw what is happening in the Obamacare website as eerily familiar to the IT technical fiasco that Britain encountered with its National Health Service online tools in 2009-2010. At that time in the U.K., hundreds of millions of pounds had been spent on large-scale IT enterprise technology, with no real user testing, no real focus on end users, and deployed with very little technical agility or room for innovation. The result was a catastrophic system failure that led to the UK's revamp entirely of the way it deals with IT systems development, contracting, and deployment. The UK's Government Digital Service, according to the NPR story, was born out of a go-to team of 300 technologists who began streamlining 90% of Britain's government IT services. Congressman Daryl Issa, chairman of the House Government Oversight and Reform Committee and Republican of California, is co-author of a once-obscure House bill, the Federal Information Technology Acquisition Reform Act, or FITARA, which now, thankfully to many, seems to have new legs. According to NPR, to address the management problem that now sits at the core of problems with federal IT procurement, FITARA would give the role of Chief Information Officer, or CIO, at the heart of federal agencies, with more budget authority power and prominence. FITARA's co-author is Congressman Jerry Connolly, Democrat of Virginia. He believes that greater accountability for a CIO will not only mean better written contracts, which will help make it harder for firms to potentially get away with bad work, but will also help to attract stronger candidates to these CIO jobs. Congressman Issa and Connolly could not be different, either in politics or temperament, and each often vocally disagrees with the other on nearly every other issue. But on this one, they're practically walking arm in arm. Connolly's Northern Virginia district is home to many IT contractors, and his constituents are among those who work on many of these deals. Besides strengthening CIOs, the bill would also clarify current law that allows for open-source software solutions, which Congressman Connolly also hopes will be more appealing to smaller companies as potential contractors, according to NPR. The next move on FITARA is up to the Senate, as the House passed it in June as an amendment to a defense bill. What began merely as a public relations predicament for many tech companies in June has evolved into a measurable threat to business agendas. This is the way many tech companies see their role in the most recent responses to surveillance revelations. As the New York Times pointed out in a story on October 31st, even as these companies take measures against government collection of personal information, their business models rely on collecting the same data, largely to sell personalized ads. So no matter the steps the companies may take, they are gathering information of interest to law enforcement and spies. This fact was highlighted on October 29th in a forum in Washington held by the European Institute on EU-US privacy issues. The U.S. Federal Trade Commission, although it regulates commercial use of information by U.S. companies, does not have jurisdiction over issues of national security. But when asked how, in this environment, the FTC sees its role, FTC Commissioner Julie Brill understood the quandary, saying, "How we deal with practices and procedures for the protection of privacy in the context of commercial use of data and for national security purposes may have different legal bases, but are directly connected by the data itself." She welcomed the fact that we are now having this debate in the U.S. on issues of surveillance use of commercially collected data. Thus, companies like Yahoo, Google, Microsoft, and others, who were frustrated with the positions that they were in immediately after the first June revelations, have moved from pursuing transparency, hoping that would show their roles in surveillance in a more helpful context, to, as the New York Times put it, grappling with the risk of being viewed as an enabler of surveillance of foreigners and American citizens. The dynamic changed decidedly in October when, as reported this week by NPR's Steve Inskeep, Google and Yahoo both learned that some NSA interceptions in Europe were being carried out completely without the company's knowledge. And this was in addition to the data-gathering efforts in which the NSA had engaged both companies by law. Being hacked, as former Google policy director Robert Boorstin put it to NPR, doesn't leave a good taste in anyone's mouth. NPR's Tom Gelton added that each of these companies do a lot of business in Europe, Asia, and elsewhere. The Information Technology and Innovation Foundation, or ITIF, a U.S.-based think tank, estimates that the U.S. cloud service industry stands to lose approximately $35 billion in revenue over the next 3 years due to the revelations. And according to NPR, Cisco executives reportedly cited the surveillance controversy as in part to blame for disappointing results in the third quarter. Despite the increasing pushback from U.S. tech industry, legal actions to stem the tide of surveillance measures have proved difficult. EPIC, the Electronic Privacy and Information Center, lost its long-shot argument before the Supreme Court this past week to have the court hear its case that the FISA court had overstepped its authority. In re EPIC was rejected without comment by the court, although activists point out that stronger cases are developing. Ofcom, the UK's telecommunications regulator, has just announced a new consultation aimed at refining its mobile regulatory strategy. Ofcom notes that in particular, it has identified a number of mobile radio spectrum bands where it believes that further work should be carried out to consider how these could be reallocated or better used to facilitate mobile data use in the future. Some of the challenges Ofcom has identified relate to how this and other spectrum can be more effectively used, for example, through smaller cells and Wi-Fi, which in turn may be dependent on having access to appropriate physical sites and backhaul connectivity. The bandwidth from wired network operators necessary to support wireless data between towers and users. The growing need for greater spectrum access to facilitate mobile data is increasingly creating difficult choices regarding how spectrum is used, and particularly at lower frequencies. This demand is being driven in part by increased machine-to-machine or M2M communications, which require ubiquitous mobile coverage, such as for cars, for example. As Ofcom considers how to prioritize strategies for further developing this market, it also has an eye on the decisions that are expected to occur at the World Radio Communication Conference in 2015 in relation to future band allocation for mobile data use. Ofcom is soliciting comments on this consultation through January 30, 2014, and the consultation document can be found at stakeholders.ofcom.org.uk/consultations. The Financial Times reported on November 4th that European Commission Vice President and the EU's top justice official, Viviane Reding, had said definitively that data protection is and will remain outside the scope of Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, or TTIP negotiations, ongoing between the EU and the US toward conclusion of a potential trade deal. The Commission's view and the position taken by all the leaders of the recent European Council is clear. "Let's not mix up the phone-tapping issue with ongoing trade talks," Mrs. Reding told Financial Times. The decisiveness of her remarks was in part an outgrowth of EU frustration over revelations of blanket surveillance by the U.S. National Security Agency, but also indicative of European resolve to, as Commissioner Reding put it on November 4th, not lower its own standards on privacy and data protection in order to meet those of the U.S. in the context of a trade deal. Whether you agree with this comparative US-EU assessment on privacy or not, the issue as to whether it is or isn't, or should or shouldn't be part of the TTIP talks has taken many public twists and turns in the past few weeks. Back in early July, EU and US TTIP negotiators had removed consideration of privacy issues from the talks and placed them into a separate track, so as to not have prospects of growth-enhancing trade bogged down by surveillance policies of the US. German Chancellor Angela Merkel has advocated strongly in recent weeks for data protection to be put back in, highlighting Germany's own anger over NSA spying on the Chancellor herself and a willingness to use economic leverage of the trade deal to ensure that U.S. policies on surveillance and privacy do change. Privacy advocates have argued that Germany's move is decidedly the wrong strategy, pointing out that to consider privacy in the context of the TTIP would very likely favor large tech organizational attempts to water down existing EU rules. U.S. companies have argued that the existing EU draft legislation is largely unworkable, as it gives little to no legal certainty to transatlantic business as to what is or isn't compliant with regard to use of individual data. But as late as last Monday, Chancellor Merkel was making a clear connection between trade and the NSA affair, adding in a speech before the German parliament that the relationship between the U.S. and the negotiation of a transatlantic free trade agreement are currently without a doubt being put to the test by the accusations that have been aired against the U.S. This was in a translation reported on by the Financial Times. More than 15 negotiation rounds on EU-U.S. privacy issues have taken place between 2011 and this year. Each has failed to reach an accord, but had reportedly made progress. Until this past summer, Berlin had reportedly been reluctantly prepared to see some of its own domestic privacy rules diluted for the sake of broader accords on commercial use of data. But the Snowden affair has changed that dynamic. Most recently, the European Parliament voted on a package of revised EU privacy rules, a regulation that Commissioner Reding has been struggling for nearly 2 years to advance. The Parliament text included a provision directed specifically at affirming the primacy of EU law over its citizens, even in the context of surveillance duties placed on multinational companies by U.S. authorities. Thus, when EU officials required a meeting with U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder in the wake of the surveillance revelations, a meeting that took place in Washington last Monday, a possible accord on privacy or a timetable for one was certainly a long shot. Despite Parliament's timetable to vote on the new EU privacy regulation by May, Commissioner Reding has reportedly agreed to delay revisions further. Fundamental to Commissioner Reding heading into this past week's meeting with U.S. justice officials was at a minimum a concrete and enforceable right under U.S. law for EU citizens to have judicial redress in U.S. courts over violations of their privacy, including a right to sue U.S. agencies, according to Bloomberg. Following Commissioner Reding's meeting with the Attorney General and Rand Beers, acting Secretary of Homeland Security, she called the discussions positive and constructive, and according to reports, both sides have pledged to try to complete a separate agreement on the protection of individuals' private data while sharing with law enforcement by mid-2014. Meanwhile, EU and U.S. trade negotiators concluded their second round of free trade talks this past week, the October date for these discussions having been delayed by the U.S. government shutdown. The first round of talks had been held in July. EU negotiator Ignacio Garcia Becerra and his U.S. counterpart Dan Mullaney of the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative both characterized the TTIP talks as having moved one step forward toward identifying areas where there are common ground. Areas reportedly covered this past week included a comparison of approaches on investment liberalization and protection, with both sides agreeing in principle to preserve freedom to regulate when it is in the public interest, according to EU officials. In addition, cross-border services, including telecommunications and e-commerce, were the subject of discussions over market access interests. The next round of talks is scheduled to take place the week of December 16th. The European Council, at its meeting on October 24th and 25th, welcomed the European Commission's plan for a new Connected Continent legislation, a package of regulatory change that has also been strongly backed by the BEREC, the body of European regulators for electronic communications. The main objective of the proposals, according to the BEREC, would be to further advance a truly single market in Europe for communication services, changes that, in theory, could advance such simple but long-needed fixes such as a single template notification form for communication companies to file in each country of operation. Each national regulator would produce a notification process in its own national language, but the form would otherwise be identical across Europe. Another issue in the package would address the end of mobile roaming premiums. One issue that the package is targeted to address is the issue of net neutrality. For the body of European regulators, they would like to see the Commission's proposal perhaps be a bit more robust, addressing such issues as the relation of specialized services to Internet access services, or by potentially broadening a list of practices forbidden by operators. The Connected Continent package would build upon the vast revisions made in 2009 to the European Telecommunications Regulatory Framework, and like that package's address of net neutrality-related issues, debate in this context may again prove controversial. For communications companies doing business in Europe and beyond, consideration of the Connected Continent package will likely prove to be a key agenda item of interest for 2014. The long-awaited Federal Trade Commission workshop on what is known by many as the Internet of Things took place this past week on November 19th in Washington, D.C. The Internet of Things refers to a notion that the Internet is no longer just a global network for people to communicate with others using computers, but is also a platform for devices to communicate electronically with the world around them. The opportunities from connected devices are endless, of course, even if the prevalent examples of machine-to-machine communications via the net still revolve around connected refrigerators, automobiles, and home heating systems. One member of the UK Parliament that I spoke to about M2M and the Internet of Things nearly 5 years ago drolly observed to me, "If my refrigerator could tweet, I'm not sure that I would want to know what it would say." Within all the possibilities for more efficient homes, cars that can warn you of impending wrecks and the like, many of the attendees at the FTC event were primed to discuss ways forward on key concerns. As GigaOhm reporter Stacey Higginbotham pointed out in her piece summarizing the event, hacked pacemakers, connected homes that show when your kids are at home and what they're watching, connected cars that can lie about your location, your speed, or be controlled by hackers. If you throw in consumers and fledgling companies that don't know what they're doing, you may have what might be the perfect ingredients for a surveillance state or worse. Federal Trade Commission Chairwoman Edith Ramirez worried that big data, the environment of data analytics that has great promise to sift large pools of M2M and other data for potentially helpful ends, may lead to the indiscriminate collection of personal information, violating what she calls the first commandment of data hygiene. Thou shalt not collect and hold personal information unnecessary to an identified purpose. Keeping data on the off chance it might prove useful is not consistent with privacy best practices, Chairwoman Ramirez added. However, as Adam Thierer of the Mercatus Institute pointed out in his review of the event, living in fear of potential worst-case scenarios and premising public policy on them means that best-case scenarios may never come about. Few of the speakers involved in the forum were willing to set some kind of regulatory framework in place, at least yet, with the exception perhaps of Craig Hefner, a vulnerability researcher at Tactical Network Solutions. His thought was to perhaps consider some kind of monetary incentive for companies to build highly secure products. And as Stacey Higginbotham of GigaOhm pointed out in her piece, Hefner said that for years folks have talked about educating the consumer as if it was the solution to security issues. But consumers neither understand these issues nor should they have to. Large companies such as GE, Microsoft, Google, and Toyota have developed connected devices long ago embedded with technology developed under principles of privacy by design and security by design. The challenge is, however, to ensure that particularly small and medium-sized businesses and startups see similar upfront emphasis in innovative product and service development as a necessary component to success. In the GigaOhm piece, Bridget Okoka, a consumer policy analyst and lawyer with the OECD, had commented after the forum to Stacey Higginbotham that it was interesting to hear the different panelists at the event saying that not only do few consumers understand the technology that is available to them, but likewise many of those working to develop it are not well informed about who, in this complex landscape, can collect their data or use it, for what purposes, and with whom it may be shared. Often, smaller companies try to cut costs and hire the cheapest developers, but as University of Washington School of Law professor Ryan Kahlo pointed out, these firms need to see that the data lifecycle starts with their business plan. He added, "We have amazing technology that allows a blind man who speaks English to speak to a German. But at the same time, we're in the Gutenberg era when it comes to terms of service and privacy notices. This is where a key innovation is needed in order to make sure that the innovations, the possibilities which everyone agrees will be tremendous, can thrive without heightening a very real concern about privacy and security. That's all we have for you this week. You have been listening to 40ANM In5, a production of 40ANM LLC. For more information and for our terms of use, visit 40a-m.com. All stories for this week's podcast were reported by at least two online or print news sources, or taken directly from relevant releases, with the exception of specific reporting highlighted from The New York Times, Bloomberg, GigaOM, National Public Radio, and The Washington Post. For those listening in the U.S. this week, happy Thanksgiving. And around the world, beginning on Wednesday, happy Hanukkah. Thank you, as always, for listening. We will be off next week, but 40ANM In5 will be back with you again on Monday, December 9th. Until then, make this week, and every week, one to remember. And bye for now.